Hey, book besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey
and Nikki,
and this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
This week we'll be discussing Shatter Me by Tahereh Mafi, but before we get to that, let's get to last week's bookish news. So I'm pretty sure anybody in the bookish community or anyone that reads books knows about Kindle ColorSoft that just released not too long ago. However, there's a little bit of drama kind of going on with it. So a lot of people are not happy with it and they're actually returning them. And I saw a rumor, I haven't confirmed it because I don't really know how to confirm it, but I saw a rumor that places are pulling them and they're not selling them anymore, but they are still for sale on Amazon. I checked that today. But yeah, so apparently there's been multiple TikTok reviews about it. Multiple people have given reviews about it, but basically they're saying that it's not running and functioning properly. There's a yellowish line at the bottom of the Kindle on every single page that just doesn't go away. And the fact that this is also like $280.
Oh my god, is that how much a Kindle costs?
I don't know about all Kindles, but I know this new one is $279, which I also noticed because I went back. So I bought a Kindle last year before Scarlett was born because I was like, oh, I'm about to have a lot of like downtime. So I bought a Kindle.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I get it.
So
that's really cute.
I know, right? I'm like, new mom, I'm going to have so much time. All they do is sleep. Yeah, okay, no. So I bought the Kindle Oasis, which was brand new last year.
Your Kindle is beautiful. And I do have Kindle envy.
I didn't realize how expensive it was when I bought it, but mostly because I also got it on sale because she was born, you know, at the end of October. So they start running, I think it was like during like Prime Day or something like that. But It's originally $279.
Jesus.
Yeah, but I didn't buy it for that price. But yeah, so this new one is like out the gate, $279, and there's no like discounts or anything because it's brand new. And people are just not happy. People are going back to like the Kindles that they had before. They're returning this one. And I mean, I get it. Whenever you release a new product, like there's some like glitches and bumps and things like that.
It's an Amazon product. They have all the money in the world behind them for market research. They should not have put out some products.
Yeah. Yeah. And to charge that much right out the gate. But yeah, so a lot of people are not happy with it and they're returning them and they're just sticking with like their old Kindles. So
I have a Kindle Paperwhite and it's fine. I mean, it works. It's an e-reader. I got it used. Actually, it was a gift from Phoebe, so I don't know how much they cost, but I think she got a used one off eBay. It works perfectly well. It is in black and white, though, which I find annoying when I'm trying to find, like, new titles to read.
Yeah.
So I look them up on my phone, so they're in color, and then do it that way, but it works just fine.
Yeah, and from what I've gathered, I haven't looked too much into the ColorSoft because I wasn't really interested in getting it since I just bought my Kindle last year. I believe it is only the titles in your library that show up in color. I think when you go into the book, it's just normal, like black and white.
Where you can like take notes, like handwritten notes and stuff. Like it has like a special feature. I feel like
I don't know.
I could be.
I know mine. I don't know if I can take handwritten notes, but I know mine. Like I can put notes into it.
Oh, yeah, I can do that on the Paperwhite, too.
Yeah, but I don't know about
this. I'm just
this.
Wondering what makes it so new and cool.
Just the fact that the library is in color. That's it.
Well.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't really interested in getting it. So
you know what I want? Have you seen, like, on TikTok or, like, Instagram or whatever, the people that have, like, a little stand for their Kindle and they have a little clicky remote?
Yeah.
So they can just, like,
lay down
there and have little snacks or whatever?
Yeah.
It's like the epitome of laziness, but I won't.
No, the biggest reason why I got the Oasis is because, like, it has the buttons on the side. So I don't have to, like, touch the page because sometimes, like, it with my old Kindle, I would touch the page and it would skip like 5 pages. So this one, it just has the little buttons. You can go forward and backwards with it. And I don't know if it's all of them, but mine, like, I can change the screen. So,
like the orientation?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and mine doesn't.
Yeah. So, that's the biggest reason why I got that one. And then I gave my old Kindle to my mom. I don't even remember what my old Kindle is, but it still works great. So,
yeah.
Okay, moving on. So, there's not a ton of bookish news right now. The biggest thing is it's the end of the year. So, lots of titles are releasing. Everybody's releasing all of their upcoming books for next year. You know, they're like teasing things. We don't have a lot of like confirmed dates, which is why I'm not putting a lot of it out there. It's just authors are saying, I'm writing this book and it's coming out next year. And kind of, and people are giving titles and some people are doing cover reveals. But honestly, there's so many that it would take up probably the whole podcast for me to go through them all.
And next year is such a vague period of time. Yeah. Any time next year. So yeah, we'll just wait.
So a lot of them I have noticed are contemporary romances. They are like flying out the door. There's so many new releases and upcoming releases. And like Emily Henry, I feel like, has a new book coming out every other month. Tessa Bailey has a new book coming out. Like Megan Quinn just released her Christmas book, which I went and I bought because I want to know what the candy cane scene is. They hooked me.
Was this the Christmas romances you were talking about? You were like, I need these. I don't even know this author, but like I got them.
Yeah. And then I also noticed that Tessa Bailey. Well,
they're cute because maybe I want to read a Christmas romance.
Well, yeah. And then I was there and then I noticed that Tessa Bailey's Christmas book is already out too. So I picked that one up as well. But yeah, so tons of releases, a lot of contemporary romances, not so much going on right now for like sci-fi, fantasy, romanticy, but we have a lot of things that are going to be coming up in 2025.
We've got Onyx Storm coming up real soon. Yeah. So I mean.
Yeah. So, and then we have Carissa Broadbent. So her book releases on the 19th. And so she's like heavily.
It's this month.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So she's heavily dropping lots of teasers. And lately, they have been a little spicy. A little spicy teaser.
Spicy.
And I can't wait to read it. Well, I know we haven't really discussed it, but just to prepare everybody, we will be taking a break for the holiday season. And so my list is like quickly piling up for all the books I want to read when we're off and on break. And I'm going to try to wait to read Carissa's book until then, because I want to be able to like focus on it. And I know like with Thanksgiving and everything else coming up, like I'm going to be preoccupied and I'll probably only be able to read podcast books. But yeah, I'm excited because it sounds so good already. And I just really hope that she's not giving us the best parts of the book, and that the rest will be let down.
Like they'll tease like the best lines.
Yeah,
and then you're just like, man.
Yeah, and then the rest is like, oh, this was the only good part. So I don't think that's the case because all of her books are fantastic. But yeah, it's really making me want to somehow get a copy of it now.
You know what book did that to me recently? The Lady Godiva retelling, Evie Marceau is the author. Of course, like, oh, White Horse, Dark Knight. What am I talking about? What book am I talking about?
No, White
Horse, talking. Black Knight, maybe it's called.
Something, yeah.
Something white, something black, whatever. The second book, I read the first book, it was fine. I was like, whatever, it's 3 stars. I was like, I am not going to read the second book. And then she put out a teaser where, like, he's banging her on an altar and like everyone walks in the room, but he like decides he's going to finish anyway while everyone's watching. And I was like, I am going to read this book. And I read the book for that scene. And that was the best scene in the whole book. And that was it.
Wow.
I was like, I feel baited.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel baited, author.
Yeah. So I try not to read a lot of the teasers, but she drops so many that they just pop up. Like Rebecca was doing it for a while for Onyx Storm.
I still have not read the blurb for Onyx Storm. I still have not, like, looked at any teasers. I know nothing.
So the blurb came out.
You tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you. But so the blurb came out, and then somebody accidentally released something else about the book, and I think it was like Brazil or some other country accidentally released something. So then she came out and released that as well. And that was even more than the blurb. And I was like, oh my God. And yeah, so I've stopped. I also have not read any of the bonus scenes yet from the Cranberry edition
either,
or the new paperback edition.
I have the Cranberry edition. I don't have the new paperback edition. I'm sure you have it, right?
I don't have the paperback, no. Oh. I have the Cranberry. So we have the same
edition. Are we going
to
read it?
I'm sure you can find it.
Oh, you're online.
Yeah. But, okay, yeah. So super excited for all the reasons. Did you see that? Oh, I'm stopping myself. But did you see that Spectacular released?
I don't have it yet.
I don't either.
It's probably not on KU. I haven't checked, but I feel like she's too big of an author to be on KU.
Yeah, surprise. Like, Fourth Wing's on KU.
True. And maybe I read... No, I don't think the Ballad of Never After series or Once Upon a Broken Heart. I don't think those were on KU. I think I read those physically.
Yeah, I have the first two physical, and I read the first one, and I did not like it.
I love that series. I love that series so much. I don't know what it is, because it's not even really spicy. It just, I don't know. It was so good. I loved it.
I'm not expecting it to be spicy, because it's very much YA. Right, yeah. But no, I just couldn't.
Well, usually, I need to have a three pino or more.
I'm not a fan of the female character at all. Plus, Jax wasn't my favorite. Yeah. Anyways, The Spectacular is out. I saw it at Target. I didn't buy it. And then when I went back to get the Megan Quinn book and the Tessa Bailey book, I went to get Spectacular and it was gone. So.
Well, you can use bookshop.org.
Yes, I can.
To order it. And you can select Shelf Indulgence as your affiliate bookstore.
So yeah, I will be getting it. I can't wait to read it. Again, that'll probably be another book that is on my pile to read during our off time. Also, speaking of tons of book releases, it is now time for a Polycon authors to start their pre-order. Like the amount of posts I saw this week of like, my pre-order's available, pre-order's available, pre-order's available. And then all of these special editions are coming out now. Like, I just showed you the one for LJ Andrews.
Yeah, I need that. I need that in a bad way. But it didn't have a price, like, listed. Do you pre-order it and then they send you an invoice later? Or you pre-order it and you pay, like, right there? Like,
both. So it depends on who's doing it. So this is through Midnight Whispers. So...
Fuck Midnight Whispers. I'm sorry, I don't... I mean that, but in a nicer way than that, Midnight Whispers.
So they're the ones that are doing it. So I'm not sure their situation. And I totally forgot I had it and I forgot to write it down. But another really big author, not like super, super big, but another author that's, you know, starting to get well known. She just released her pre-order list and you can pre-order and then you make a deposit and then you just have to pay in full by like a certain date. So that's how a lot of them are doing it. Like you just make a deposit and then you have to pay in full by this time. And then remember with all the shipping issues that's going on with like the service that they're using, a lot of the authors are only bringing the pre-order.
That's right. And I don't want to miss out. I don't want to miss out on some of those specials.
Yeah, because they used to bring the pre-orders plus additional ones to sell at a Polycon. But with all of the fees, now they're only bringing those that have been pre-ordered. And or like if you're not attending a Polycon, but you want a Polycon special edition, you can order it beforehand and then they'll ship it to you, but it doesn't get signed.
Right.
So
I feel like in case Midnight Whispers ever listens to this, I feel like I need to not say fuck you, Midnight Whispers, and I need to explain why I have beef with Goodnight Whispers. So you have to, so they put their book box out and they just give like a teaser and they're just like, they give you like four words and you don't get to know what the book is and you have to just like, buy the book. And then they will, like, on the first, for example, like, let's say they do it on the first of the month. I don't know the actual dates. So on the first of the month, they're like, to the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered. And you're like, I don't know what book that is. But you order it because you're like, I don't want to miss out. This could be a really great special edition. And then, so you order it. And then sometimes they sell out before they even announce the title. So then on the 10th, they announce the title. And if there's any left, then you can buy it. And I think that's crap. Because I think, like, They baited me because I bought a book because I was like, oh, that those four words sound like it could maybe be this book, and I wouldn't want to miss out on a special edition. So I spent like $55 on this friggin' special edition to get a book I never heard of before in my life. That took 4 months to arrive, that we're now selling on eBay. I don't even know what it's called.
It is. I know this because I was the one who listed it. Something
Something about
about
stars.
1 hour stars fall, or, I don't know, but
Yeah, I don't
they're
know.
reselling for $125.
Yeah, so if you want a really pricey resale one.
It's sealed. Still sealed.
It's beautiful, but I thought it was
Very
pretty.
pretty.
I thought it was going to be something else because people in the comments were like, oh, it might be this. And yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a marketing tactic for sure, but it
It's
seems to
that
work out for
FOMO
them.
mentality. It's like, I'm gonna FOMO. I'm gonna like miss out on this.
Yeah, it seems to be working for them.
Yeah, sure did. They got my money.
Well, that's all the bookish news that I have for this week. So now we'll move on to our spoiler-free review of Shatter. So at the time of recording, the Goodreads rating was a 3.85 stars with 996,000 ratings. Oh my goodness. Okay.
That's literally almost a million ratings.
Yeah, for real. This is the first book in the Shatter Me series. There are six novels and four novellas in the series. This book was published in 2011, so like the height of young adult dystopian. It was the same time as like Hunger Games, Divergent. So like this is when dystopian was like in. And I will say, so we talked about this in one of the bookish news like about a month or so ago, but she's coming out with a new book called Watch Me, and it's a continuation. It's pretty much like a sequel. It takes place in the same world and follows one of the like side characters from the series. And so that book comes out sometime in 2025. The cover, the look of the book is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. So she's still rolling with it.
And I think that the six books, I think they're broken down into two separate trilogies. It seems like
Okay.
there was like a first trilogy and then a second trilogy for the six main books. And I don't know if they all follow the same character arc or
Believe
not.
they do. I think it's all the same characters with the same like it's just the timeline that flows.
Okay.
Because when I read the description for Watch Me, it seems like it's just picking up at the last book, and the main characters are all about are just about the same main characters.
Okay.
The genre is young adult dystopian romance and science fiction. The science fiction part, this book really states that it's science fiction. This is like baby's first science fiction.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily agree with the science fiction
Yeah.
part. Just the fact that dystopian really kind of falls under that umbrella of science fiction, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, babies for science fiction.
Yeah, for sure. You can also find this book on KU. You can get a physical copy. Don't forget to use bookshop.org. It's also available on audiobook. There have been a couple of special editions, most notably Fairy Loot did a special edition. And then there's been some like exclusive editions, deluxe editions for like Target, Walmart, Barnes & Noble. Got really popular as of late. I think
Which
due to
is why
book.
we started reading it
Yeah.
because it was all over Book Talk, and that's kind of what we wanted to do, you know, was the purpose to like, you know, review all these popular Book Talk books.
Yeah. And so since then, it's kind of got a revamp as far as like quote unquote special editions. But the only real special edition was Fairy Loot, and I think they did the whole collection. I'll get into the book description.
Okay, so I think it's important to note that a lot of this is written in scratch thoughts. So I'm going to, and there's scratch thoughts in the description. So I'm going to read it and I'm going to say scratch after, just so you guys know that we can denote that's how it's done. I have a curse, scratch. I have a gift. I am a monster, scratch. I'm more than human. My touch is lethal, scratch. My touch is power. I am their weapon, scratch. I will fight back. Juliet hasn't touched anyone in exactly 264 days. The last time she did, it was an accident, but the reestablishment locked her up for murder. No one knows why Juliet's touch is fatal. As long as she doesn't hurt anyone else, no one really cares. The world is too busy crumbling to pieces to pay attention to a 17-year-old girl.
Diseases are destroying the population, food is hard to find, birds don't fly anymore, and the clouds are the wrong color. The reestablishment said their way was the only way to fix things, so they threw Juliet in a cell. Now so many people are dead that the survivors are whispering war, and the reestablishment has changed its mind. Maybe Juliet is more than a tortured soul stuffed into a poisonous body. Maybe she's exactly what they need right now. Juliet has to make a choice, be a weapon or be a warrior.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. And the scratch thing is weird, but
yeah.
I feel like it was important to include that in there.
Yeah, no, it is, because it's very much a large part of the book, and we'll get more into the writing style a little bit later. Trigger warnings for this book: confinement, force, death, gun violence, torture, it's not graphic, suicidal thoughts, violence, and child abuse and neglect. There's also talks of starvation and mental insanity, I will say. So don't forget your mental health is important.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about some of the tropes. So like Kelsey said before, this was the height of the YA dystopian. And what did every single YA dystopian have at that time period? A love triangle. And this book is no exception. We have love triangle. We have establishment versus anti-establishment. Childhood friends to lovers. And of course, our female main character. She's the most specialist with the most special powers. There is a one-bed situation, but they decide to sleep on the floor.
Yeah.
They don't use the one bed. They both sleep on the floor. Stupid. Any other tropes I missed, Kelsey?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So before we really get into the spice rating and the pepper rating and the smell report and all the things, I feel like it's really important that we discuss the writing style.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned, we have a lot of scratch thoughts. It's very prevalent in the beginning of the novel. As the blurb states, Juliet starts off her story. Juliet is our female main character. She starts off after being in isolation for almost a year.
Yeah.
So the writing style is kind of indicative of her mental state and her mental illness due to being isolated, which is why I think that the writing style is the way it is. I mean, I think it's obviously a purposeful device by the author. But yeah, so scratch thoughts. So every 5 seconds, she says something and then she scratches that it's crossed out and then she says something different. We also have some really long, dramatic metaphors.
So I will say, I don't know, because you did this audiobook and I did it. I did it KUN physical.
Yeah, I did a mix. I have a lot to say about the audio. So
I don't know if they mention it at the beginning of the audiobook, but it is in the physical and it is on the KU. But there is kind of where at the very beginning, right before the title page, kind of where we're used to now seeing the trigger warnings.
Mm-hmm.
She has a little note in here that says
she does not.
She does.
Okay. So when I started audiobook and they did not include that in the audio.
So, With KU now, if you read on a Kindle, it skips all of this. So you have to go back to it. And the only reason why I caught it was because I moved to physical. So I saw it. So it says, "Dear reader, the strike-throughs in Shatter Me books are intentional. The writing in this series is occasionally as erratic as its main character and serves as a visual representation of the chaos in Juliet's mind. The repetition, the hyperbolic language, the obsession with numbers, these are not errors on the page. As our heroine grows and evolves, so too does the prose. And as she finds her voice, the strike-throughs disappear, the language softens, the repetition dissolves, and the numerals ease into written words. This is ultimately a story of change. Thank you so much for reading." So she states that at the very beginning of the book.
I think that my reading experience would have been a lot different had I've been aware of that. And like I said, the audiobook literally just goes right into the audiobook. And most of the problem that I had with this was the writing style in the beginning. It was fucking annoying. It's called purple prose, guys. And I'm going to give you the definition of that. And purple prose is overly ornate prose that may disrupt a narrative flow by drawing undesirable attention to its own extravagant style of writing, diminishing the appreciation of the prose itself. And as we have been confirmed by the author, yes, this it's written this way intentionally. It's so that we can see inside Juliet's mind. And that's great.
but I hated it.
Yeah. So when I first started this book, I did it on Kindle. So I didn't see that part. And then I lost, Scarlett misplaced my Kindle. And so then I was like, I know I had this book physical. And so then I went and I grabbed it, and that's how I saw it. And I was like, okay, this helps me really understand why it is this way. Because I know listening to it, you hear it one way. But yeah, a lot of the things she says when she's talking about one or two or whatever, it's written as one.
As the numeral and not spelled out.
Yeah.
Which is I have a list of shit that, bothered me about the writing style, and that was one of them. And the word repetition was also something else that drove me crazy. And the purposeful use of incorrect grammar. There's no commas. I can't.
So
give me my Oxford commas.
I think that the way she does this book so intentionally with the writing style is so unique. My problem with it is that this is a young adult book. And I don't think a writing style like that works well in a young adult setting, if I'm making sense. Because I think that's so sophisticated and so deep and intentional that who this target audience is for, I don't think they would catch on to that, because we even missed it at the beginning and can appreciate it as much as if this was an adult, true maybe science fiction.
Right. But and now again, knowing about that little author blurb, I could see people discussing the beginning of this book, in a literature class, breaking down the writing style and what have you. Would a lot of it be lost on a younger reader? Perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to dumb down the young adult community or anything. Okay, but
I'm thinking more along the lines of when this book came out. So in 2011, I was just fresh out of high school because I graduated in 2010. And so this was before we still, I think, had MySpace. We might have had Facebook at this time. So the technology and the access to information and internet and all of that was still very new. And so for reasons of that, I think my generation, which is the young adult generation when this book was written, wasn't really there yet in intellect, basically. Not as advanced as the generation now of young adults who have access to anything that isn't inside of a textbook that they are cleared by their state or whatever to read.
What year did you graduate?
2010.
Well, the internet would have been a thing for years and years and years.
I mean, it was, but we weren't actively engaged in it.
The way we are now. Connected now.
Yeah, I remember going to college and Blackboard was very much a new thing, and them being able to submit papers online and for them to check to see if we pulled references from online, it was still very much new. And so a lot of us back then, because we had learned to always get information from libraries and textbooks and encyclopedias and things like that, that's what we were doing. And so it's not like the kids who are growing up now, that if they have so much already just put in their face just via internet and social media. And it wasn't like that back then.
Right. And I think when you think about the researching, I'm trying to think, my son is 17. I don't think I've ever had to, maybe when he was in elementary school, go to a library to check out physical books to read and for citing sources for a project or whatever. That's just not a thing that people have to do anymore because of the internet.
Yeah. And so back then, reading wasn't as popular, especially genres like this weren't as popular back then as they are now. And so I think for the audience that this book was originally written for, which was mine, that I think would have gone over my head at that point. Because you're coming off Hunger Games and Divergent, where none of that is the case. They didn't write books
Like, those books weren't written like this. Like, right. They were written very simplistic. So I think this was, like, ahead of its time, which I think is why it's getting popular now. But I think it kind of missed the mark. It was too advanced, I think, for young adults at that age. Sorry if I make any of the millennials sound stupid.
No, I just feel like my whole argument that I had and how aggravated I got, I'm going to give you an example of what we're talking about. And this is one sentence in the book. No punctuation, guys. So I'm just going to read it. My cheeks, my hands, the pit of my stomach, and I'm drowning in waves of emotion and a storm of fresh rain. And all I feel is the strength of his silhouette against mine. And I never, ever, ever, ever want to forget this moment. So just, I don't know, just like run on sentences.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you'd been in isolation for almost an entire year and then all of a sudden you're thrown together with like another person, especially someone of the opposite sex, like, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, cause she even said like she hadn't uttered a word. Like, not only had
right, in her 264 days, she hadn't spoken.
Yeah, she hadn't touched anyone. She hasn't spoken to anyone. She hasn't seen the outside. Like, she's seen the outside, but she hasn't, like, been outside. Like, she's been stuck in that cell. So, I mean, I can understand how, like, because that's a big argument that they have in prisons for solitary confinement, how it can drive people insane.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, I can only imagine for her.
I mean, you're supposed to be touched by another human like 8 times a day. Like, that's like the standard minimum.
Really?
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Dude, I get that in like 5 minutes with my daughter.
Well, then you should be really happy.
Sometimes. Okay, so let's move on to our spice.
Okay, I got a thing.
Okay.
Okay, so 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 hugs for maintenance, and 12 hugs for growth.
I can tell you the last time I actually hugged.
You have a husband.
I don't hug him.
Well, snuggling counts as hugging, right? Are your arms around him?
Sometimes.
Well, you better go home and hug your husband, because if you're not, then he's not surviving.
It's still just.
I know, but I'm just saying, so says the internet.
Yeah, see, which you could find immediately right now.
Right.
You'd have to wait until you went home and
your mom drove you to the library. And you use the card catalog and you ask the old crotchety librarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Hugs? I don't know why that. Hugs are weird to me.
What?
I don't know. They're just weird. Hugs are weird. Like, you get up all in somebody's personal space. I don't know.
I don't know what to say to you. Right now, you have children, so I know you're all up in personal space.
Yes, but they're children. That's different from, like, grown adults.
I don't know. I'm making the children.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
COVID messed me up. Ever since COVID, I don't even want to, like, touch another person's hand.
Okay.
I'm not a big, this is totally off topic, but I'm not a big, like, handshaker, because I don't know where your hands have been, and most people's hands are gross. Fair. And so when I worked at the bank, like, they were big on, like, you have to greet, like, the customers or potential customers or whatever, clients, and you need to shake their hands. And I'm like, I don't shake hands. Like, it's just gross to me. You are a stranger. I don't know where that hand has been. I don't know when the last time that hand was washed. So I was like, I don't shake hands. Like, unless they, like, put their hand out and they make me shake their hand, and then I immediately, like, sanitize it.
Ever hugged
you? No, because I'm not really a hugger.
Yeah.
I used to be, and then I realized how weird it is. So I don't really hug people. I'll do like a side hug, but
okay, well, that still counts, doesn't it?
I don't know.
We digress.
Yeah, a lot. All right, spice rating. I gave it a 1.5. There's lots of, like, petting and rub. I gave it a 1.5, but it's only because there's so much of it, and it's actually weird.
Okay, because they're horny teenagers.
Yes.
Think about yourself pre-sex, and what you were doing and like your heavy makeout session.
Yeah.
They are making out heavy. They are like throwing hands everywhere.
Yeah, there's lots of petting and rubbing and grinding and
but not touching any of the body parts.
No, they almost do like a couple of times, but there's gross kissing. Like the kissing in this book, the detail, it's gross. Yeah, it's very much teenage, like.
I think she does a great job of describing what it was like at 15 to make out with your boyfriend.
So to be a young adult book, there's spice, but it's, to me, gross spice. So I just want to preface that. That's why I gave it a 1.5, because there is a lot of it. It's just teenage grossness.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I gave it a 0.5 because it really, it's just kissing. And, like, the rubbing hands up and down spines and hips. Yeah. And that's just, like...
Yeah, and especially because normally in young adult books, there's nothing. So for there to be this much...
Yeah, I mean, we went through the entirety of Powerless and they didn't even kiss each other.
The same thing with Divine Rivals, which technically wasn't a young adult.
They did it, but you couldn't tell.
Yeah, you couldn't tell. So, Sweet Peppers, I went back and forth. I landed on a 1.5. Again, it's not actually cute. I don't know. It just kind of feels stalkerish to me. Like, I don't know how you say you're in love with someone you've never even talked to before. And it's been years. And somehow you still love this person to the point where you dedicate your entire life to finding them again. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, I gave this a 2. And Kelsey is referring to our female main character and one of our male main characters, one of the legs in the love triangle there. And so they kiss a couple times, and then there's one point where he's shot, right? And he's, like, bleeding out, and they throw him in this getaway car, and his, like, eyes are closing, and he can't breathe, and he's like... He's like... basically, like, bleeding out in the fucking backseat. And they all of a sudden decide to have a conversation about whether or not they're exclusive with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like...
Mind you, they've already both told each other that they love each other and that they've loved each other for years.
Right. Because it's a childhood friend to lovers situation.
Which they weren't even really
they
friends.
They weren't really friends.
Because they hadn't even talked to each other yet.
But, like, girl, like, man... is bleeding out in the back of the car, and you're like, are we exclusive?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the time, nor the place.
No.
Also, only kissed twice.
Like, after the first time, she was like, they were also in the tank, I think, at this point. And she was like, you don't have to stop.
Yeah, I thought they were, so I think that they both kind of wanted to do it.
Yeah, they're
twice. There's one point where he's like, I'll come to your room later, and then the other dude's like, no, you're not allowed to leave.
Well, not even before that, when they are in, like, the little apartment place, right after the tank thing.
Yeah, and they get interrupted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's points where we think that they could have done it, but...
No. Yeah, it...
So that's Adam. That's our one leg of the love triangle. And then we have Warner, who is our other leg of the love triangle, and I'm not giving him any sweet peppers.
No.
His love declarations and his shit just comes off as psychotic.
Yeah, he seems like he's like a stalker obsessed.
And we're not talking like good stalker obsessed, no. Or dark romance. Like, this is just, it's
creepy.
It's creepy.
Yeah, because at one point he was like, but I could love you. And she's like, you literally murdered somebody in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, so I could love you. And she's like, yeah, dude, like you're weird. Get away from me.
I've got some quotes that I highlighted that I can pull up here. Oh, yeah. So we're done. See, I love you, Juliet. I would treat you like a queen.
After he, like, kind of kidnapped her and was holding her hostage and, like, made her do some really kind of fucked up stuff. Yeah. No, thank you.
I wish.
We'll talk about in the spoiler part.
Yeah. So basically when they first meet, he's like, I know everything about you, love. And he calls her love right off the bat and not in, like, that cheeky, like, English way. You know,
yeah,
like he's like basically being like, I love you right from the very beginning. And he doesn't even know her. This is like the first conversation they have. And he's like, I've waited for you forever and I'm not going to let you go easily.
Because he like, yeah, basically stalked her, found all of her information, medical records, like treatments,
everything. She's like, I don't even know who you are. And yeah, she's like, I don't even know your name.
Yeah. And he's like, but I love you, baby.
Yeah. So yeah, it's weird. It pushes, again, this is why I'm like baffled that this is a young adult book, because it pushes the boundaries so far into like not appropriate for young adults.
Yeah, he's vaguely rapey.
Yeah.
Like he pins her arms, like, you know, he basically restrains her so that he can get like close enough to basically like rub his body on her. And
yeah,
a couple times he's like really definitely in her personal space inappropriately.
Yeah, and she's very much saying, I don't want this.
And he's like, oh, but you will want
this. Yeah. Okay, moving on to smell report.
Smell report. So we have more of a taste report than we have a smell report this time. So we have Adam. He tastes like rain and sweet musk. And then his kiss later on tastes like fire and honey exploding in her mouth.
Ugh.
Ugh. Exactly. And Warner, he tastes like peppermint. But Kelsey, Warner has a smell and Adam doesn't. Warner has a smell. Warner smells like gardenias. And so I wonder if that means Warner's going to be endgame because he has a smell. And the other guy doesn't.
I don't know how you go from the events of this book to she falls in love with him. I don't see how that's possible.
I know. We're going to need to like form some kind of like bridge from one to the other. We're going to do that in the spoiler review because we don't want to spoil.
Because he's very much like the villain in this book.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot about in romanticy, and I'm not saying that this is a romanticy. We have our morally gray male main character who is kind of the villain and does bad things. And maybe he murders people like Caden in Gear of the Flames.
Yeah.
Right. So he kills people. He's a commander. He's, you know, a baddie, whatever. But it's hot when he does it. There is nothing about Warner that is hot.
Well,
it's not giving hot villain energy.
A lot of those things with the morally gray, it's they're doing cruel, not, I don't want to say cruel, but they're doing heinous acts like committing murder and torture and stuff like that, but for a moral reason. Warner doesn't at all. Like, and we'll, again, we'll talk about it in the spoiler part, but two of the instances that directly involve Juliet, you can't tell me that any part of that has a functioning moral compass as to why that situation is happening. Other than the fact that he's just fucking psychotic.
Yeah, he is morally black. There doesn't appear to be a gray. So, unless somehow it is revealed later on in later books, he is morally black.
I don't see how he could have a redemption of any kind, given some of the situations that happened in the book, whatsoever.
So, well, we've talked about him, but I suppose we should talk a little bit more about Warner. So he is 19, right? He is the head of his sector of the reestablishment. So when the reestablishment took over the government, they divided the land, whatever, into sectors, and he oversees a sector. He's like, he's the king of his sector.
Yeah. And then we have Adam, who is a childhood, it's revealed he's a childhood friend of Juliet's, but he also has connections to the reestablishment, and that's how all of this kind of this story starts. And then we have Juliet, whose touch is lethal, and so there is an accident that happened that basically she's considered a murderer, and they throw her in like basically an asylum for people who are like crazy or like are just not.
I think it's for like the like really severe cases.
Yeah.
Because she talks about how like she can hear the other patients like screaming loudly.
They're children. They're
yeah, all the time. So it doesn't seem like it's just like a friendly mental hospital. Like they're not there to help. Like they're locked up. Like maybe like
they're to die. Like,
quote unquote criminally insane. You know?
Yeah. But they're all like children from what I'm gathering, and yeah, they're basically just thrown in the cells to be forgotten and to basically just die.
So she, her whole thing in this book is she's just used to living a very isolated, lonely life, which has led her to be kind of not all there mentally. And so you just see that kind of throughout the book. And then Adam, they know each other from like their childhood, elementary school or something. And he sees a very different version of her. And like he's trying to convince her that she's not crazy and she's not a monster. And then Warner is very much like he sees her as like
a weapon. He wants her to embrace her, quote unquote, monster.
Yeah. He basically makes her think like, oh, now is your time to get revenge on everybody because nobody cared about you and we're going to let you like stay in the asylum for the rest of your life. And so like
he's basically like Darth Vader, like come to the dark side, join me and we will kill all the people together.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I mean, there's not a lot really to their characters besides what their goal is in the book, basically. So their mission is their character.
That's fair. It's pretty standard. I'm the villain, so I'm going to act villainous.
Yep.
Yep. I'm the specialist girl, so
yep.
Everyone's going to love me, be into me, think I'm the bestest.
Yeah. And according to Nikki, Adam is a organic whole wheat waffle.
Yeah, he's about as interesting and thrilling as an organic whole wheat waffle.
I was dying in the car. No.
That's all I have. And that's literally all I wrote. The entire Adam portion of the outline just says organic whole wheat waffle.
Yeah. The only additional thing I wrote was for Warner, and I said, or did you say this? He gives me the fucking ick.
Yeah, that's me. He gives me the fucking ick.
Yeah, he also gives me the fucking ick. So that was something I was going to put in there. But, yeah. All right, moving on to... Okay, well, before we move on to our ratings, world building, there's not a lot. So basically, it's like any other dystopian book. It's set in a futuristic time on Earth where all of the buildings have gone to shit. Everybody lives in like little sectors.
Like the environment is failing. The animals are dying. The food is poisonous.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's really it. She just sometimes describes that like the grass is like non-existent or dying and orange in color. Yeah, the birds don't fly and the clouds are gray.
Right. And then there's talk of this technology. Now, she's only been locked up for 264 days, so that's not even a year. And when she does encounter technology, she's like, oh, it's shit I've never seen before. It's like, girl, you've only been gone a year. Because before that, she wasn't locked up. So that didn't make any sense to me with the world building. Because it's like, how did all this happen in like 1 year while you were gone?
Yeah,
so that was really a strange plot to
hole.
Me.
Yeah, it was a plot hole for sure. But I think what the author is trying to get at is her parents and the way that they lived was like they were very poor, so they didn't get any of this stuff. And then when she goes to like with the reestablishment, they have like basically all of the like. They have all the money, and she describes like the building, and I think she even mentions like how many people had to starve for this building to have.
Right. There's a chandelier, and there's, you know, like plush couches, and these things are new to her. Seeing these things are new to her.
Yeah, because they were from the olden times that she says like she kind of remembers, but it's been so long since like they lived in like normal houses and attended normal schools. And
but she's only 17. That's the other thing that kind of bothered me. Like it takes longer than 17 years to like erase a civilization so that it's then.
So I don't know exactly like what happened. So the thing that happens that she gets locked away for, she was 14 when that occurred. So I don't know what happened between then and when she gets locked up, but the way that it seems is she was isolated from the moment.
So maybe perhaps she was like isolated at home or something.
Yeah, from the moment that happened. Because then remember, like, Adam talks about how she just disappeared from school. Like, she didn't go back to school, and everybody wondered, and then they heard rumors.
All fair. Okay.
So, basically, the way that I'm taking that the writer has set this up, which, again, is a plot hole, because they don't say exactly what, like, where she went, but she stopped having access to the real world at 14. And so it's not until 17 that she's reintroduced into the world, is what I gathered.
I'm really pissed at the audiobook, because my review of this would have been so different had I seen that disclaimer in the front of the book. I'm really mad.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. Also, yeah. The audiobook is fucking horrible. I feel like I need to include this in our review. The narrator is breathy and panicked, and everything that's going on is she's tugging like this, and it's just, and his silhouette, and his bird, and the bird was white, and I just, and I can't, and I, and that was the tone. And then also, to kind of denote the scratch marks, they made a scratch noise. So you had to be like, huh? You really had to, like, sit and focus. Like, I read this while I was driving, because I do spend a lot of time in the car, and it was like, if I needed my GPS, I had to turn the audiobook off, because I needed to be able to hear, turn this up really loud to hear the scratch noises in the audio, so that I could be like, okay, that's her false statement, or that's the statement that she's amending. And it was really hard.
Yeah, I think I have realized that if it's a young adult book, to not do an audio version.
See, and I do the opposite, because I feel like young adult books, I don't have to pay as much attention, because come on, they're not always, like you were saying, they're not always written so in-depth. It's right. Like, whatever, plot, plot, plot.
Get even that, but I just think because it's a young adult book, they try and find, like, a younger narrator or make somebody...
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And make somebody's voice try and sound young, and, like, they do too much to it. They don't just read it. Like, it's too distracting for me, because even Daughter of No Worlds was kind of like that for me a little bit.
Yeah, that was a difficult audiobook as well. But I think it was her accent that kind of got me on that one. You know what audiobook was really good? To Kill a Shadow.
Huh.
It's an Apollycon author. I want to say maybe Quinn is the last name, but I'm not positive. But I really had a great time that audiobook, and I highly recommend reading it.
Okay. Yeah, I've now learned to sample it before I purchase it.
See, I just listen to them on Spotify, so okay. I can just...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to our ratings, I gave it 2.5 stars. It's a really weird book. You have to really be bought into the writing style. It's a huge part of this book to find any type of enjoyment out of it. Yeah, I think it's really important. They should, like, audiobooks should really, any type of trigger warning, any type of, like, disclaimer, I think should be part of what is, like, said, or even in KU, like, it needs to be something that you see, because you didn't see it, and you're...
And therefore, I 100% had a different experience. I would have had a different viewpoint if I read this, and I would have been able to think more critically about it, rather than bitch about the no commas.
Yeah. So, this book's, and it seemed like the way that she wrote that disclaimer, it's the series in its entirety, has this very unique writing style that you have to really be bought into to enjoy this book. And I think, again, I've already talked about it, I don't think it's the right writing style for the genre it is.
So this is related but not related. Blindness by Jose Saramago is an adult dystopian novel. And the premise is that basically everyone wakes up one day and starts going blind. Our entire civilization goes blind, except for one person. And it's actually a really fantastic book. It's beautifully written. I'm pretty sure it won a Nobel Prize or a Booker Prize, like one of the two, like, main literary prizes. But it's very similar in that it's written with no punctuation. And it's written in such a unique writing style, which is indicative of, like, the thoughts of the main characters and indicative of the fact that, like, the people can't see. And it worked really well for that book. And it was really fantastic. We discussed it in a literature class in high school. So if you're into weird writing styles and you want to read something that has a little more to it, I recommend Blind.
Yeah. It also is like House of Leaves.
Oh, fuck House of Leaves. Don't even tell me you read the entirety of House of Leaves.
No, I can't figure it out.
stupid.
Yeah, that book is, it's a puzzle, basically, in order to be able to read it. It's a puzzle. There's also something else that is, like, a legitimate puzzle. In order for you to, like, get the next book, you have to complete it. Otherwise, like, you're stuck in that book. I can't remember what that one is, but I saw a TikTok on it, and somebody was trying to solve it. But, yeah, House of Leaves is, it's a puzzle, which I like, which is why I bought it. And I was like, this is going to be so interesting to read. I mean, it's crazy, but if you're into stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, so House of Leaves is a horror novel, and how it works is it's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure in the sense that you are reading, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, turn to page 447 and read two paragraphs, and then turn to page 32. And then you're given two bookmarks, right? Or is that the other one that I'm thinking of, the one that you flip upside down? Daniel Uske has another book that you read, and you flip it upside down, and you have two bookmarks, so you can read them side to side.
Flip, but I don't think that you have the bookmarks. Or if you do, I didn't
get it. I think that was confusing both of his books. But yeah, so you go to this page and then you go back and then some words are in color and that means something different. And
yeah, and House of Leaves, like some of the, it's like, it'll be like a little part of it is horizontal. Part of it is vertical. There's like a part that is like a square and then there's like a smaller square inside of it. And it's very hard to figure out.
I made it about 120 pages and I only read that book because someone that I was close to at the time was like, this is my favorite book. I was like, I'll give it a shot. And it was a stupid book. And you know what? He was a stupid person.
Yeah, I have it. I don't know if I'll ever tackle it. We'll see. Okay, so Nikki, your review.
Yeah, I guess I'll give that. I give this book 2 stars. And I don't even know why I gave it 2 stars. I did not have a good time. I did not have a good time at all with the audiobook. I struggled. And then I did not have a good time at the end. I did not have a good time.
Yeah.
2 stars.
Yeah. So
that's it. I'm not even going to elaborate. I'm not going to read any more of it. The only thing that I would slightly be interested in reading is there's a novella. So book 1.5 is called Destroy Me, and it's Warner's point of view. So I'm imagining it's like a retelling of book one, but Warner's point of view. And I would be really interested to see in his brain how he got from, hey, I don't even know this bitch, to I'm in love with her and you're my queen.
So it is in the back of, so this isn't a first edition. So this is like, I think it's like the 25th run. So this one, I have a physical copy. So it's technically, I guess, on my shelf in the sense that I already own it. But this one comes with the novella, his novella. And oh, nice. If you read it on KU, it also comes with his novella.
Which is how I finished it. I finished the last, like, 50 pages on KU. Yeah.
So I didn't. I haven't read it yet. I probably will. But I know just from the description, it starts off right where this book ends with the last scene of Warner. So, like, not at the very end of Shatter Me, because, like, they have their last scene, I don't know, like, maybe 10 chapters before the end of the book.
Yeah. I'm just interested to be inside of his brain.
So.
And see the inner machinations, because I want to know how he's a love interest.
Yeah, I don't know if it goes backwards in his mind at all on how he got to the point of being in love with Juliet, but I do know that it picks up from where him and Julia have their last encounter. Juliet. But yeah, so I might read it just because, yeah, I'd be curious. But that's probably as far as I'm going to go. I have the second actual novel at home, too. Because, like, the way that I work is I see a book that I think I might be interested in.
And I'm really glad you didn't buy, like, all 10 of them when we had them at the shop. We were like, I want to buy all of those. I was like, don't do it.
I know. And so, at the time, like, there was only the 2, so I bought the 2. Like the, what's the series, the Ember of Ashes or whatever that is?
Yeah, that was a good series. I didn't read the whole thing, but like,
I have the first 2.
They're good. It's young adult, but I think, yeah, I would like them.
I have the first 2, and I, just because I was like, oh, well, I think this would be interesting, so I bought the 2 that were available, and I did the same thing with Fireborn.
I read the first one of that. I did not go any further. I have a really bad habit of reading the first book in a series and then just, like, not continue. Not always for any particular reason, just because.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is off of your shelf. Other than you already have it, so it's like on your shelf. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, but no, for my shelf. Yeah, it's not something I look at possibly ever really continuing. Although the new book that's coming out is pretty. That's it.
It's just, so bad. It's so bad.
It's so pretty, though. But anyways. Okay, so that is our spoiler-free review of Shatter Me. We will be jumping into the spoiler part. But join us next week for our review of Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole. So if you want to read this book and you haven't, this is the part where you're going to jump off. If you've read the book and you want to continue the conversation or you want things spoiled for you, and keep listening.
Yeah. Are you still with us? Come on backstage, guys.
Okay.
All right. So what do we want to talk about first?
Okay. So I think like, let's talk about Warner. So,
okay.
Because I hinted to it a little bit in the spoiler-free part, but the things that he does. So one of the things, and I don't know if it's because I'm a mother to a now toddler. So, you know, Scarlett turned one, so she's now officially a toddler. But if we weren't reading this for the pod, I think at that scene, I would have been done with the book. Because it's so uncalled for and so unnecessary. And I don't feel like that with a lot of books. I am a very big person with an open mind, especially when it comes to literature. I will give everything a chance. Like I read dark romance and things like that. But that to me crossed a line. And especially for it to be in a young adult book. And if you're unclear of what we're talking about, it's the scene where he puts her in the room where all the spikes come up and then sends in a fucking toddler, like a 2-year-old, into the room. And she has no choice but to touch the kid.
Right. And he has purposely dressed her in like
skimpy clothes.
Skimpy clothing so that a lot of her skin is exposed so that she can't even like at one point she thinks about ripping her shirt off to like try to pick up the kid, but then realizes that it like there's no clothing there. Like, what is she gonna do?
Knowing that. The murder, the quote-unquote murder that she was charged with, was she accidentally killed, like, a 3-year-old.
Right, because she saw a child being neglected and abused, and she wanted to comfort the child, so she rushed to pick him up. Because, if you're with us, you know, or maybe you don't know if you're here for the spoilers, her touch, she causes pain with her touch. She basically, I think, takes in other people. She gets pleasure and gets more, like, and feels powerful when she touches another person, but they feel pain.
Yeah, it's basically the way that I got it is, like, you're touching a, like, for the person, it's like you're touching a live wire and your body seizes up and they can't break the connection.
I kind of pictured it like Rogue, you know, like X-Men, like when she touches and takes, like, their power or whatever, their, like, life force.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like how.
With Juliet, she can't turn it on and off. It just occurs the second somebody touches her, and so she has to be the one to break the connection. But because she's getting such a surge of power and it feels good to her, it takes her a minute to like reconnect with her brain on what's happening and break the connection. But she's the only one who can break the connection. The other person can't, and then therefore that person ends up dying because they, I don't know. It's like, again, like my best analogy is touching a live wire. Like,
right.
That's what happens. And so the first instance is that he forces a guard to touch her because he wants to make a spectacle out of it. And so she says so that everybody knows that she's dangerous and to not fuck with her. But really, I think he's just
at the point where I still thought that he might have been like morally gray, where he was like, I'm going to do this terrible thing, but I'm trying to protect her, but I do not get the...
But the toddler thing was...
That was just fucked up.
So uncalled for. And then I'm like, how is this a young adult book that it has a scene like that in it? Because that's pushing it for even adult books, let alone young adult books. So at that moment, if we weren't reading this for the pod, I would have been done with it because that's just so uncalled for. And yeah, makes me like, there's no way he can come back in any shape or form from that. And there's no way like she should ever forgive him for making him do that. Knowing not only her past, the fact that it's a baby and just a diaper, mind you, like
right.
the baby's not wearing clothes. Like he's just in a diaper. So the choices are she does nothing and he gets
Impaled.
Impaled. Or she has to touch him, and then, like, it's a potential, like, he could die because he's touching. So, yeah.
It was really fucked up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants her constantly. He's telling her to embrace, to, like, embrace the side of her and to enjoy the power and to enjoy the killing and, you know, do it for revenge, do it for yourself, you know?
But how is torturing a toddler getting revenge on
he was trying
adults.
To was he trying to test her power, her resolve, like her willingness?
I don't know.
I mean, unless he's trying to like break her, because you know she repeatedly tells him like, I'm not a monster, I'm not a monster for you, I don't want to hurt people.
Yeah.
So unless he's just seeing how far he could push her.
I don't know.
And I mean, it worked though, because didn't she use her bare hands to break through a concrete wall?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm assuming that was his goal, was to see like what else would emerge. What would she do? Put her in like extreme duress, because really you couldn't have picked a worse situation to put her in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, either way, it's still fucked up.
So unless she turns like dark, like something happens, or I don't know why she would go back to him. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
So we've got, so he's the, you know, he's the head of the reestablishment, basically. We'll call him that. And the reestablishment are the baddies, you know. And then we have this other group, the resistance, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? So we've got the resistance.
Yeah.
So is it going to be like a Hunger Games situation where like District 13, like, wasn't really, like, it sounds like it was great, but then of course it was corrupt and their ruler was corrupt and had to do that. Like, is it going to be a situation like that where something happens and she's like, hey, you guys are wrong and the reestablishment is right and they're doing the right thing? Like, how are they going to make this? How are they going to make her go back? I don't know either. I just don't see. I'm going to Google it because I don't want to read sex books to find out how this happens.
And it's not like we're just making up the fact that Warner is a love interest or because he has a scent. There are particular parts in this book where it's pretty much like shown that that's a plot line that they're going to go down. So
like, it's not just that he is into her and he's professing his feelings for her. There are points and times in their interactions where she feels empathy or sympathy for him. And there is a subtle shift in her perception of him, you know, halfway through the time that they spend together. So it's not like she just hates him. I mean, she hates him.
Yeah.
But there's something else going on there. And there's a situation where, you know, she kisses him because she's trying to get the gun.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And she's feeling things. She's getting all hot and horny about it.
Yeah. And she's like, she says she feels like she wasn't expecting the electric pull from him. And then she gets lost in it. And she has to basically remind herself, like, why she's.
Yeah, you know, he's like, you're not here to be frisky, girl. Like, this is your enemy.
Which also puts us to another point. So we talk about, like, how Adam is, like, kissing her and stuff. And then now Warner is kissing her. So her touch is lethal, except for to them. For whatever reason, Adam can touch her.
Wait a minute. I didn't even pick up on this before. Hold on. Hold the phone. So we know that Adam can touch her.
Yeah.
And touch all her skin.
Yes.
How come Warner didn't realize when he was kissing her that he wasn't immune to it? No, he doesn't realize he's immune to it.
Yes,
until he like rubs her, like her leg accidentally.
Yes, when she's jumping out the window.
Yes.
So this happened before he kisses her.
But he doesn't realize it, and she doesn't realize it either.
Yes, she does.
No. Okay, so he kisses her, right?
They kiss. So Warner.
But why didn't she explode him? Or is it only her hands?
What are you talking about?
Like, okay, so Juliet, we have Juliet, right?
Yeah.
So she touches someone and they become a live wire, like you said, right? Is it only her hands or is it all of
her skin? No, it's all of her skin.
Okay, so then how could she make out with him?
Who?
Warner.
Because they both realize it at the same exact point.
But that's not the point where they realize it, though. She doesn't realize it until he like skims her leg as she's jumping out the window. That is a post kiss. How did you not realize during the kiss?
It's not. So
what happened? Just finished with 4 hours ago.
literally 4 hours ago. So
when they have the like code 7 or whatever it is, like the drill, and they're planning on escaping, and then Adam busts into the room. Like, this is right after Adam and her were on the bed and they were like maybe gonna do it, and they're still in the reestablishment building. And there's like the code thingy and it's the drill, and then he comes back and he's like, we gotta leave now. But Warner's in the room, and Warner was like, you don't know a real thing between a fake thing. And then that's when they're going to escape, and he punches Warner or whatever and like incapacitates him, and she's like, you're gonna walk us out the front door. So then their only way to escape is through out the window. And so he's like zip tied or whatever on the ground. And when she runs past him to get to the window, because that's how he figures out that Adam can touch her. Because Adam goes first and she's going to jump out the window and he's going to catch her. And then he takes a swipe at her as she's passing by. And when she hits the ground, she's like in her head. And it's like, I don't know if he realized. Like, she's like trying to play it off as like, he didn't actually touch me. He didn't actually touch me. It was this that touched me. It was that that touched me. It was this. It wasn't his hand. Because then she says, he touched my ankle when I was passing by. So she knows, but she's trying to convince herself that Warner doesn't know. And then fast forward to when they like...
When she goes and she saves Adam. Yeah. Right. You're so right. I'm confused.
Yeah. So then she knows that Warner knows. Because he even says that, like, did you notice I could touch you when I grabbed your ankle?
Yeah, he was so excited about it.
Yeah.
So, either they have powers, like null powers, like Bella and Twilight. You know, like, the powers don't affect them. Or, it's because they love her.
Just because, like, what you...
I don't know.
They're immune, like...
Because they love her.
Yeah, I don't know how...
I mean, it's one of the two. Either they have, like, null powers, or...
Yeah, because it's never...
They're the only two that can touch her.
Well, okay, so at the end when they're in the Omega Point or whatever, which is like the Rebel underground bunker or something, and the main guy, Castle or whatever his name is, says like, oh yeah, you're not a freak, like there's other people that have powers and or gifts is what they call them. And so he's like, you can meet people, and she starts to meet people, and then she even says like, do you think Adam has a gift and that's why he's able to touch me? And they're like, yeah, maybe. So Adam doesn't know if he has one, but the end of this book hints to he might have some sort of gift. Warner, on the other hand, I have no idea. Because Warner, in all of their time, never says that he has a gift or that he's, like, unique like she is. So I have no idea. But it's just weird that those two can touch her, and that's all we know of people that can touch her. So,
yeah. I don't know.
Which, speaking of Castle... He reminds me of Morpheus from Matrix. That's all I got.
Let me show you the real world.
Yeah, basically.
So my biggest question in the beginning, when she is locked up, you know, she says hope is a white bird with a gold crown. And, you know, today I will see the bird. Today I will look out the window and there will be a bird. And she's obsessed with this idea of the white bird with the gold crown. And lo and behold, Adam has a tattoo of a white bird with a gold crown on his chest. What does this mean?
I don't know, because he says... Because
it's never really fucking discussed ever again.
Well, she asked him about the tattoo.
Right.
And
she's like, I dream about that fucking bird all the time. That's my bird.
Said that he dreamt about it. Don't quote me on it. That I don't know. But I know he distinctly says, like, it's something that, like, I've thought about or whatever. And then she's like, so have I. And he's like, really? And so, like, it's a connection between the two of them.
Like, what does it mean? I want to know.
That neither one of them really...
Are we fated mates here? Like, what's going on? We're dreaming about a fucking bird?
Yeah, I have no idea. But
I don't know.
Yeah, so that was, like, a shock to both of them that... Both of them know what that bird is and has some sort of significance to both of their lives.
I would like to know the significance of the bird.
Well, you might have to read book two to
find out. No, I'll Google it.
Okay. All right.
I'm sure there's like a wiki fandom.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for our review of Shatter Me by Tahereh Mafi. Again, join us next week for our review of Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole. And as always, be sure to like and follow us on all of our social media platforms. Please rate this podcast with some stars. Leave a comment letting us know any recommendations that you have.
Speaking of, we did get a little listener feedback.
Okay.
About the hair washing.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Douglas sent me a text message and wanted me to know, and I should tell you that I don't know if we should tell all the people, that Douglas got their hair washed.
Oh, okay.
By a person.
Yeah.
And they said it was a 10 out of 10 experience.
Ooh.
So Douglas is for the hair washing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they must have a not super detailed routine.
But it was a literal specific text message like, hey, I saw this. I heard the episode. I heard you talking about hair washing. I want you to know.
Okay.
Thanks, Dougie.
Yeah. Thanks, Douglas. Always coming in with all of the, I don't know.
Just coming in.
The fire alarm across the street's getting.
Yeah. Yeah. The fire alarm on campus across the street is going off in the background.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering what that is in the background of the pod.
Okay. Anyways, thank you so much for tuning in.
Stick around.
All right, we will see you next week for our review of Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole.
Bye, book besties.